on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And thanks to Roz and Emma for driving it through the afternoon. It's Friday the 17th of June. This is Game On. Coming up today, can Rory pick up where he left off at the US Open? Greg Allen brings us up to date on day two at Brookline.
I feel like I've came into the last couple of majors a little more relaxed. I think because I feel like my game's in good shape, so I don't have to tie myself in knots about over-preparing for the golf course or doing this or doing that. Really proud and happy of how clean I kept the card today, and that'll be a goal going forward the next few days as well.
In Gaelic football, Neil Ewing previews the Tailteann Cup semi-finals, and in hurling, Shane McGrath sets us up for the quarter-final doubleheader of Cork versus Galway and Clare v Wexford tomorrow.
In around the houses, brilliantly plucked out of the air. Oh, Quilligan with another brilliant save. This one even better. Back with Lee Chin, who buries it. A goal for Lee Chin with absolute venom here.
In racing, Jane Mangan sends us her report card from Ascot and Motorsport. We'll get the latest from the 50th Donegal International Rally. And in hockey, we've Ireland's Roisin Upton on preparations for next month's World Cup, which starts with a rematch of the 2018 final.
We are down to the final as the world number one and seven-time World Cup winners, the Netherlands, take on world number 16 and first-time finalists, Ireland. If ever there was a David versus Goliath sporting matchup, then this is surely it.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. That's 51552, or you can tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On.
On 2FM. With Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
And this is John Kenny with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Do get in touch if you will. 51552 at GameOn2FM is the Twitter handle. We're going to immediately go straight to Brookline, the US Open. Two Irish players out on the course. And Rory McIlroy, well, we're expecting him out on the course shortly because he started yesterday early, so he goes out late. Greg Allen joins us now from Brookline. Good evening to you, Greg.
Good evening, John. It's been a very interesting morning because the wind has blown here. It wasn't forecast to blow this morning. It was supposed to blow this afternoon. And the way that the US Open and all major championships really are constructed over the first 2 days is that, you know, you get a late and early type of break in terms of your draw time, and then you get the opposite. And sometimes it favours one half of the draw and not the other. It has happened for the second major in a row that one half of the draw has got kicked in the teeth. And not one of those players is Shane Lowry, who's 5 over par after 16 and flirting with the cut line. But somebody who's battled brilliantly through this today has been Seamus Power. He's just completed a round of 70, 3 birdies, 3 bogeys. But the most important part was that he holed putts at critical times, 4 of them from between 12 and 30 feet. 4 in really scenarios whereby it was slipping away and then he pulled it back again. So Seamus has now got 27th in the Masters, 9th in the USPGA, and he's now level par here, I should say 1 over par here for this championship, which at the moment is tied for 37th. But by the end of the day, I am certain he's going to be in the top 30. Certainly, I'd bet heavily on that because the conditions as they are prevailing right now are difficult enough for him to be close, in fact, to the top 20 by the end of the day. So Seamus Power in with a round of 70 today to add to his 71 yesterday. So he makes the cut for sure on 1 over par. It's not such a good story for Shane Lowry. In fairness, he got drawn with Phil Mickelson and Louis Oosthuizen, who have both played terribly, and he has gained no sort of momentum from that particular grouping. And he started well. He holed a 45-footer for birdie on the first on his first hole, the 10th, a very difficult hole. But the actual speed of his putting on the greens, the judgment of the speed of the greens, has been something of an Achilles for him. He had 2 really bad 3 putts because of bad speed, both leaving the putt 6 to 8 feet past the hole. And those 3 putts early on kind of stalled a bit of momentum that he got from that birdie. And he's dropped back to 5 over par now with 2 holes to play, tied for 91st place. Sounds terrible, but with the conditions that are prevailing, if he could make a birdie in the last two holes and get to four over par, he may make the cut. But right now, on five over, I don't think he's going to make it for the weekend. So it's about 15 minutes away or thereabouts, a little bit more, before Rory McIlroy tees off. He's around a 67 under his belt from yesterday, and he's still tied for the lead. And the lead at the moment, Nick Hardy, an American who plays mostly on the Corn Ferry Tour, the secondary tour, he shot around a 68. He set a clubhouse target at 3 under par. It was followed by around a 67 by Scotty Scheffler, the world number one. He covered the last 11 holes and 5 under. He was 2 over at one stage and then finished with a rush, an eagle and 3 birdies in those last 11 holes. So he's in on 3 under par after a 67. Callum Tarran, the Englishman from Darlington, started with a couple of pars. He's on 3 under par. David Lingmerth yet to start is 3 under. Joel Damon yet to start is 3 under. And of course, Rory McIlroy underway after that 67 on 3 under par. And they are one stroke clear of a group which includes, incidentally, Matt Fitzpatrick, who's 2 under par, has just birdied his 17th hole, the man who was 5th in the US PGA Championship and won the US Amateur Championship on this very course back in 2013. He's 2 under, just 1 off the lead, and a very interesting man also on 2 under, Sam Burns, one of the hot players on the PGA Tour. 3 PGA Tour victories to his name this season. He shot around a 67, equaling the best of the day, and he's in the group on 2 under par.
Thanks, Greg. We'll actually hear more from Greg at the back end of the programme. Actually, looking forward to going sitting home tonight and watching McIlroy. Wonderful course that, in Brookline, it is tough. Couple of headlines to give you involving Irish competitors. Irish South Africa game in the Women's One Day International Cricket Series out in Clontarf today. HBV studio sponsored event. South Africa win the third game there. They scored 278 for 5, bowled Ireland out for 89. A lot of a learning process there for Ireland, losing the series 3-0, but they did get a terrific result in the opening match of the T20 series, losing that by 2-1, but they were missing a lot of players through injury and also for leaving certs as well, would you believe. End of day one of the Donegal International Rally, Callum Devine leads there, 8.5 seconds ahead of Matt Edwards and Alistair Fisher in third place. Championship leader Josh Moffat is fourth. We'll be hearing from Donegal a little bit later on in the programme. And Republic of Ireland international goalkeeper Gavin Bazunu has completed his transfer from Manchester City to Southampton. I just dropped my little thing on the floor. Let me get back with it. Bazunu has completed his transfer from Manchester City to Southampton. Bazunu joins the Saints for an initial payment of £12 million sterling, around €14 million. Euro. Could rise to around 15, and he signed a 5-year contract with his new club. We got a bit of reaction from him today as well.
I mean, to leave Manchester City was a big decision, considering the size of the club and obviously where they are. It was a massive decision to make, but I feel like it's a brave but also an important one to make in my career, considering that I want to continue the game time that I've been getting over the last 2 years, and I think it's important that I continue to play.
Yeah, more players we have in the English Premier League, the better. Gavin Bazunu, congratulations to him and best of luck to him in the future. And they're back tonight, the Premier Division of the SSE Artistry League. Bohemians against Shelburne, Derry City against Strahada, St. Patrick's Athletic against UCD. The big one, though, second against first, 7:45 start for Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers. And up there for us will be Adrian Eames.
Game on.
Football.
So then, after a 3-week hiatus, the league resumes. So, where were we then? Oh yeah, Shamrock Rovers, 8 points clear. They face Dundalk in second. Stephen O'Donnell's side have a game less played, so a win tonight for the home side could be significant in terms of the title race. Not that Stephen O'Donnell is talking about a title challenge for his team, who've won their last 4. Anyway, both sides should be refreshed and ready. The break will surely have helped Jack Byrne of Shamrock Rovers in his return from injury. The Hoops, of course, gearing up for a busy spell ahead, which includes European football. For Dundalk, goalkeeper Nathan Shepherd and Joe Adams were on international duty with the Welsh under-21s. Dundalk are unbeaten at home this season. 7 wins and 2 draws. Impressive stuff. This has the makings of a great contest, and it kicks off at Oriel Park at 7:45.
Game on.
Football.
Thanks to Adrian Eames, and enjoy the match. And one other piece of news involving Irish competitors today, Ireland's double bronze World Championship medalist Roisin Ní Riain back in the final this evening at the World Paris Swimming Championships in Portugal. In the 400 metres freestyle, she finished narrowly outside the medals in 4th position, but the Irish are having a great run of results there in Madeira. And later on this evening, Barry McLaren goes in the S9 100 metres backstroke final, and Nicole Turner returning to the pool at around 7:30 this evening in the SB6 100 breaststroke final. She's already medalled, as well as Roisin Ní Rin. So congratulations to both of those. This is Game On here on RTE2FM. John Kenny with you until 7 o'clock this evening. We're going to talk hurling, and specifically those two big games tomorrow in Thurles. The All-Ireland Hurling quarterfinals are upon us. The ad break doesn't want to play.
FM with there Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Hurling.
Pressed the wrong button. What's wrong with me this evening? JK, can you explain how Bows Against Shells isn't on the TV? I'm trying to, a long time gypsy, can't get a ticket for tonight's game. Sold out. Sorry about that, but if you can, enjoy the game. And Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers sounds like a mouth-watering game. Hurling, All-Ireland quarterfinals, Galway against Cork, Wexford against Clare. They're tomorrow on RTE Radio and TV as well. Shane McGrath joins me to talk about both of those. Evening, Shaney.
Hello, John. How's the farm?
Not so bad at all, man. I saw early part of the hurling championship, Cork getting well beaten by Limerick. I didn't think they would be contenders at all, but they seem to be just making the right moves at the right time. This could be an interesting game against Galway tomorrow, do you think?
Yeah, I think it could. I suppose I've seen them then down in Walsh Park against Waterford, a completely different team, John. Mm. You know, the intensity they brought, you know, just in the face of the Waterford lads that day, and I suppose even for us from talking, seeing Cork people there, they were just so happy with, maybe they were gone away from the over use of the short ball that they were going through, like, where, you know, they were trying, I suppose, perfection is the enemy of good, I think someone is saying, someone had, but they were trying to just have the perfect ball all the time, whereas against Waterford that day, they just kind of changed the way they played. They brought it on into the tip game. Like, people saying, you know, that Antrim were a pint up and all this the last day. That's, like, I mean, that was no shock to the majority of hurling people. Like, Antrim are a really good hurling team. Like, and as I said last week, there's no more going up exhibition stuff, like, you know, opening up a field when you're playing Antrim now. You know it's a battle, especially in Corrigan Park and everything. And I think there was no panic in the Cork dressing room at half-time that they were that they were a pint down. And, you know, they drove on. Maybe the scoreboard flattered them a small bit. But, you know, I think they got the win. That's what they wanted. They got the job done. And I think people maybe are reading too much into how they performed against Antrim, because, as I said, I rate Antrim highly, and Antrim and Corrigan Park are they're a serious challenge for any intercounty team. So I think coming to Thurles as well, Cork lads love, they'll like Thurles, they enjoy playing there, like, you know. And people say Thurles is a home field for Tip, you know. I actually don't think Thurles is really a home field for Tip.
Really?
It is by geographic reasons, but I think most teams love playing a Thurles, John, to be honest. I think Cork are one of those teams. Like,
well, it's a natural home for hurling, really, isn't it?
Well, they say it is the home of hurling. People from Kilkenny and maybe even Limerick now might disagree with that. So.
Of course they would. What do you think Galway can bring to the table?
Yeah, look, they were disappointing against Kilkenny. I think, like, Kilkenny really did outwork them, and it was a real workmanlike performance. Like, I was just looking at even the scores. Like, Kilkenny got 22 scores, Galway got 17 scores. Like, Kilkenny, Galway got off 36 shots. You know, it shows you, like, the pressure that they were under all the time. Like, if you compare that to Limerick in the Munster final, which was ferocious intensity, but Limerick still managed to get 51 shots off and get 30 scores. You know, it's a massive difference, like, in the standard. Like, I'm using Limerick now because Limerick are the standard, John.
Yeah.
You know, 51 shots, 30 scores. Galway were nowhere near that. The last thing is Kilkenny. I'm sure they'll be hurting from it, because I don't think they performed at all. I think getting Keenan Fahey off is a big thing, and, you know, the two player boys are off as well. Look, bit of a joke as well, the way things worked out, but look, I'm not a fan of this trial by television, because I tell you, John, there's a lot of people, you know, hurlers, footballers, ladies footballers, smoking players, all up and down the country, and if you were playing a match and then something is shown back on a television, there'd be a lot more suspensions handed out over the years. So yeah. I'm not a fan of the trial by, you know, the trial by television thing. I think if it's not picked up in the game, we should kind of move on with it. But look, they have Keenan Fahey back, no more so than Clare, have two boys back, and that'll be a big boost to them. But look, I think a lot of people will fancy Galway for the physicality, and, you know, that's maybe where Cork will find it difficult. You know, if Galway went right down the middle of Cork, you don't have that physicality to hold them up. But I just think I thought they were really good against Tip and Thurles last day. As I said, I thought they were really good against Waterford. I thought they did what they had to do on Corrigan Park. They played well, they worked hard, And I just think they're coming into it in a good place, and I actually fancy Cork to win this match tomorrow, Jack.
Okay. Just you mentioned there on about GA appeals, there has been a lot of talk about players being sent off but not serving suspensions. Actually, tonight on the Championship on RT Radio 1 at 10 o'clock with Damien Lawler, Barry Kelly, the former referee, has been speaking about that. This is what he had to say.
Yeah, at this stage now, a player will nearly appeal something regardless of the fact that he's blatantly in the wrong, because he will believe that something can be found. You know, we sometimes in the GA are slow to ape or, you know, look at other organisations, but we have followed, say, soccer and rugby in terms of maybe yellow, red cards, black cards, sin binnings and so on. And these are global organisations. The GA is a national organisation with a lot of people working part-time or volunteers. And I think we need to look at maybe the rugby system where, you know, they have a commissioner or someone who can cite someone for foul play. Mm. There needs to be real consistency in that too as well. There is a perception that RTE kind of led the way with these particular... I don't think that myself, but there is a perception out there that because the Sunday game highlighted a couple of the Clare lads, that therefore it wasn't coincidence that the same Clare lads then were brought before disciplinary committees. I think there needs to be real consistency in that right, what is, like, red card offences, if they're missed by a referee, then what's they're the definitely brought forward.
That's Barry Kelly there. We haven't got much time because we're actually squeezing a lot into the programme tonight, Shaney, but you fancy Cork against Galway. What about Clare and Wexford? That Clare defeat to Limerick must have hurt.
Yeah, indeed. Like, you know, and I suppose everyone was saying what a brilliant game it was, and it was, and I was lucky enough to be there, John. It was one of the best ones finals, you know, ever really, you know, for intensity, hurling, the hits that was going on and everything. But Clare got massive credit for it, but I suppose at the end of the day, they lost the match, like, so... They would have still been hurting. Like none of those lads have a Munster medal. Like, and I'm sure they'd all love to have one. But
are they still All Ireland contenders, though? Are they? Do you think?
Yeah, look, I think this is it. Like, what will the reaction be from now? Because look, it's easy to get up for Limerick, because you know if you're not up for Limerick and you're not really really up for it, you're going to get blown away. Like, how will they regroup? How will they, you know, try and hit that level again that they hit at the Munster final? Because John, it was some level of intensity, of hurling, of everything. Try and get to that level again. To be ready to perform at the very, very top. Because if they're not ready to perform at the very, very top, Wexford are coming under the radar. I thought they were very good against Kilkenny. They were far superior to Kerry. You know, they were. I think Kerry were in that game maybe when Wexford were the dominant force in the game. Like, you know, so they're coming in under the radar. Rory O'Connor's finding form. Dio Keith hurling well. Conor Mack leeching. I just feel that it might be a step too soon for the Wexford lads, you know, at the moment. I think Clare, I think they will regroup. Getting the lads back is a massive boost. Can they tie down Tony Kelly? I'm just reading a quick stat about him, John. Clare won the last 4 out of 6 wins, I think, over Wexford. Last 4 out of 6. I think in those games, Tony Kelly has scored something like 141 or 142. Just against Wexford. No, that would be some lads' total career scores, mine included. So I'm just saying, like, can they stop Tony Kelly? And I think the person that will get that job is Damien Rick. If they can, it'll go a long way to Wexford winning it. But I think if Tony hits form and the rest of the Clare guys bring that same intensity in the Munster final, I think that Clare will do the business.
I think you're leaning towards Clare, yeah?
Yeah, just about.
It's a very experienced Wicklow team, though. Or, sorry, Wexford team, isn't it, as well? I know Chin is back, and that's obviously very important from their point of view. I know you alluded to him there, but that to have him, if he wasn't there, you wouldn't think they'd have a chance. But he's there.
Yeah, he's there, yeah. And he's there, Tony Kelly, like, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he was immense against Kilkenny, you know. And as I said, you know, I think Roy O'Connor's starting to find a good bit of form as well. I thought Dio Keith was brilliant against Kilkenny, as I mentioned already. You know, Conor Mack is there, Liam McGovern, Jack O'Connor. You know, like, they have a really good set of forwards. It's just, you know, I suppose, no more so than Clare got up for Limerick. The Wexford lads really do get up for Kilkenny. And, you know, they'll have to be at the same pitch, the same intensity as they were against Kilkenny lads and more, or else... You know, it'll be year over tomorrow, like.
All right, so your leanings Cork and Clare.
Cork and Clare, keep it in Munster.
Keep it in Munster, right? I'm looking forward to going down there myself tomorrow. Actually, working.
Yeah, I'll see you there, John.
Definitely. Thanks very much. And matches on RTE television tomorrow. The first match starts at 1:45 and second match starts at 3:45, also over on RTE Radio 1, full coverage radio-wise with my colleagues over there. Looking forward to it. Thanks to Shane McGrath. We're going to talk hockey after this.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Game on.
On 2FM. With Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
We're going to see Mogwai on Sunday. The Irish coach Sean Dancer's named five uncapped players in his panel for the upcoming World Cup campaign. This is hockey. Women's hockey gets underway 2nd of July in Amsterdam. At the other end of the spectrum, the side features five players from the memorable 2018 run to the World Cup final, with Kate Mullen reprising her role as captain. But I'm glad to say we've got Róisín Upton on the line, the vice-captain. Good evening to you, Róisín.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Okay, so back into the water we go, huh?
Yeah, God, it's hard to believe, isn't it? 4 years absolutely flew.
Yeah, huge July, isn't it? It's a huge July for you and the squad, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And preparations are going really well. We're just back from a trip to Japan where we had four games, and then Japan are actually coming this way. And we're kicking off a four-game test series here in UCD tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow, okay. So how's preparations for that gone?
Yeah, really good. There was a Junior World Cup, so an under-21 World Cup that got delayed from December to April. So we had a couple of the girls join after that, which is fantastic. And then the bulk of the squads really have been together for the past 6 weeks, and it's been great to have that time together. As you can imagine, with the Olympics delayed, you're kind of one year down in terms of preparations for another major tournament, in terms of preparations for a World Cup, especially with so many people having retired and stepped away. And it's a new, fresh outlook, so it's really exciting.
So that's Sofco series, taking on Japan four times before you start playing the World Cup qualifiers in July in Amsterdam. Tell us what's the format of those.
Yeah, so we've got three pool games. We're going to open up with an exciting battle against the Dutch, who we met in the World Cup final 4 years ago.
Easy start, isn't it?
Gosh, the reigning world champions, they've been number one for quite a number of years now. So to open up on a Saturday night in a packed stadium in Amsterdam, you dream about playing occasions like that.
Sure.
And we'll have 2 days off before playing Chile, who are ranked 17th in the world.
Where are Ireland ranked now at the moment? Sorry, Róisín. Where are you ranked
now?
We
are 12th.
12th. Okay, so 17 against 12. And the third match?
Is against Germany, who are ranked 5th in the world, the day after Chile.
Okay. Is it the top two then qualify, is it, through to the next stages?
Slightly different. So the top team goes straight through to the quarterfinals, and second and third will go into kind of a crossover game to fill the other quarterfinal spots.
Okay. How do you think it's going to go? That's a tough assignment. Germany, obviously, and the Dutch are the big hitters in that group. How do you think it's going to go?
Europe is the home of hockey, so it's the only pool out of four. It's World Cup of three European teams, so it'll be no easy task. We know the Germans very well, haven't played them a lot over the last couple of years. Very different styles to the Dutch. And then again, Chile are a little bit of an unknown. It's their first major tournament. They haven't been to a World Cup or Olympics before, just like we hadn't in 2018. So I suppose that's the target game. We want to get out of our pool and we'll see where we go from there. But really, as ever, in tournament hockey, it's different to other sports. It's very quick turnaround, and, you just play each game as it comes.
Yeah. We'll see it here, won't we, in RTE, I believe.
That's the plan, we hope.
So it just means that the heroes of, well, obviously they're not all there, the likes of Daly have retired and people like that, but, many of the heroes from the 2018 campaign still involved as well. So, people have fond memories of that.
Yeah, it's crazy reminiscing on it. Our own World Cup group chat from 2018 has been hopping over the last number of weeks, thinking back to 4 years ago and how preparations were there. So it feels like we've had a couple of chapters since then. You close that one and we went to Olympic Games, you close that one and here we are now with five brand new caps and 15 players out of a squad of 20 that have never been to a World Cup. So the excitement, it's just getting, it's just getting really riled up now. Everybody's buzzing to get on the plane.
Sure. It was meteoric, really, wasn't it, that couple of years ago when you surprised everybody by getting to the final. You still have to pinch yourself and say, how on earth did we do that?
Yeah, it doesn't feel real, I suppose we went there under the radar and just wanted to play to our potential, and we'll go with the same attitude again this time. We won't be quite as under the radar, but, if we can perform and play to our potential, again, anything can happen. And as you said, we're ranked 12th in the world. So any finish higher than that would be a great success.
Okay. So how do you see this going? Obviously, the Dutch is the toughest game to start with, really, isn't it? And at their home venue, then Chile and Germany. How do you think the pool going overall? Do you think you could win the group?
I suppose you just take it a game at a time. You never really know what's going to happen. You know, we didn't think we'd win the pool in 2018, and we managed to. But, you know, I think in a pool with the likes of Germany and Holland, you know, who are known and notably winning medals at these major competitions all the time, goal difference will be massive, you know. So, as I said, it'll be a real crunch game against Chile, but anything can happen in the other two.
Yeah. And the spirit in the camp is good under Sean?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. You know, it's extremely rare to have such a quick turnaround from Olympic Games to a World Cup. So it's really exciting. And I suppose sometimes not having the experience and not having any expectations around what these tournaments are going to be like is really good. And that's what a lot of the girls, a lot of the younger girls are bringing to the group.
Yeah, you're going back kind of somewhat into the unknown with this, aren't you? As you say, 15 or a lot of players in the squad weren't involved 4 years ago. So it's a new beginning, really, isn't it, for Ireland's women's hockey team?
It is, and this is the consistency that we spoke about getting to these major tournaments, because that's the reality of turnover, you know, and our under-21 and under-23 programme have only gotten better over the last 5 or 6 years, which has, again, fed into the quality of our senior team and meant that, you know, we do have players coming up through the ranks.
I just as a comparison to say, you know, 2007, the Irish men's cricket team actually went ahead of the governing body, basically because the squad was actually winning matches at World Cup level, while the governing body was kind of slow to react. Do you think you've got all the support necessary from your governing body to move Ireland on the world stage?
Well, I suppose that's what we spoke about 4 years ago. You know, you want to put Ireland on the map. Or you want to put Irish hockey on the map here in Ireland. You know, we're an incredible sporting nation for such a tiny island, and I think we've managed to do that, and there's a real excitement around hockey, and the numbers have been growing since. And then for ourselves, we wanted to put Irish hockey on the map just like our men did back in 2016 by qualifying for their Olympics, and we want to do that in world hockey, and it's great we've been able to sustain that because
with the cricketers, as it's just a comparison, you were then suddenly in the limelight, and you know, being on TV, a lot of kids would want to get involved in hockey. Have you seen that come in? Because that's exactly what happened with the cricket team, and they weren't prepared. Have you seen an influx of new players coming through because of your success of 4 years ago?
Yeah, massively. You know, there's been a huge increase in numbers, and also players going back that might have played it in schools and clubs that are going back at a later age, and that's, you know, that's the beauty of hockey. You can play it till you're 80. We've had a lot of new clubs being set up, and really we're just trying to keep up with that with the standard of coaching and, you know, facilities. They're the main things.
Okay, well listen, we wish you the very best of luck. Opening match 2nd of July, isn't it, against the Dutch?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, well, listen, bring home the bacon this time, won't you? I hope I have a really, really good tournament. And best of luck to all of you and to Sean and to Roisin Upton for joining us as well. Congratulations to them on their recent success. 4 years ago, making the final. Could they go one step further this time? Well, it'll be all on RTE television. We're going to have a quick break and we're going to go to Jane Mangan and Ascot.
RTE 2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Yeah, I definitely want to go and see Mogwai now. I've got the taste for it. Jane Mangan has been at Ascot all week. Jane, one day to go.
Game on.
Racing.
Yes, John. The curtain is nearly coming down in Royal Ascot. We have one day left. It is searingly hot over here, but on and off the track, the temperature, the action, the competitiveness, the horses, everything you would expect at an international meeting. It has been brilliant. Nature Strip on day one lit up Australian Racing in the Kingstown Stakes. He was awesome in the sprint. Can Australia get another sprint on the board with the Platinum Jubilee runner Artorias and Home Affairs tomorrow? Chris Wallace, responsible for the three-year-old home affairs. He will be a warm order to give Australia a double in that race. Aidan O'Brien has capped a brilliant week already. He will have plenty of chances tomorrow, not least in the opening race, the Chesham Stakes, with Alfred Munnings, but he's recorded his 80th 8-0 wins at Royal Ascot for Aidan O'Brien today, with changing of the guard landing the King Edward Stakes. He also won the opening race, the Albany Stakes, with Meditate. She was really quick and speedy in that race, but Aidan O'Brien's week will of course always be remembered for that brilliantly tough defeat performance, shall I say, from Kyprios in the Gold Cup. He was the young improver. Stradivarius had his excuses, but Kyprios rose to the challenge in the colours of Moigler stud. That was an awesome win in the Ascot Gold Cup. Not least, Joseph did not leave his father steal all the plaudits this week, with State of Rest landing him the Prince of Wales' Stakes, 10 years on from when he won it as a jockey on So You Think. State of Rest, the highest rated horse in Ireland, landed the spoils in the second day feature here at Royal Ascot. Jessica Harrington, of course, always won for the big day. She landed the Ribblesdale Stakes with Magical Lagoon. Shane Foley getting his first Royal Ascot win on the board after frustratingly missing out on Alpine Star due to COVID regulations a couple of years ago. So yes, there's plenty more to come tomorrow. Alfred Munnings in the Chesham. You've got the Platinum Jubilee Stakes. You've got the Jersey and the Hardwick, where we're going to see Hurricane Lane return to action, having not seen him since last year when he won the Irish Derby, he won the Grand Prix de Paris. Can he get Charlie Appleby and Godolphin back on the winner's board? But as I retire for the evening, it has been a brilliant day, albeit a searingly hot one here at Ascot.
Game on.
Racing. Thank you very much, Jane. Well, after 3 years of frustration and cancellations, the dual Donegal International Rally finally celebrating its 50th anniversary this weekend. The only three-day rally left in these Isles. Round five of the Eight Sands Irish Tarmac Rally Championship. Since its return, rallying, the biggest discipline in terms of licence holder under the auspices of Motorsport Ireland, has seen a boom in entries. Donegal's no exception. Well over 200 crews entered the event. They're only allowed to run 161. House sign falls have been seen across hotels and bed and breakfasts in the northwest for the event. There could be well up to 75,000 people there the weekend, including Martin Walsh, motorsport journalist. Good evening to you, Martin.
Good evening, John.
Six stages down, Callum Devine has the early lead. We'll talk about that in a second. But in terms of the crowds, what have you seen today on day one?
Absolutely huge crowds, John. Been coming to Donegal for a long, long time, and I think this weekend's crowds are absolutely huge. There was coming back this evening into the final service after the day's six stages. There was at one stage, I'd say about a 5 mile tailback.
Oh.
One from Manor Cunningham, Newton Cunningham to Manor Cunningham was, as somebody said, it's just like a car park.
Wow, that's incredible. But we do know that Donegal attracts huge crowds time and time again. And I suppose because it hasn't run for 3 years, the rally fan certainly wants to get back and see the biggest and best rally in the country.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, if you look at the rallies in the Irish Tarmac Championship, they all have their own particular flavour. But I think if you ask any driver to pick out one rally, it's the Donegal Rally they all want to win, probably, because it's, as you said earlier, it's a three-day rally. It's the toughest. And put it into perspective, as Matt Edwards was chatting last night, he said that, you know, the mileage over this rally is almost two-thirds of the whole entire British Rally Championship, you know, just in one weekend alone. So that will tell you, it's a test of man and machine, and the roads up here are just simply cracking. They provide, I think, one of the biggest challenges, and the many iconic stages that are out there, you know, there's a twist in every turn, I think.
Sure, Matt Edwards, no, he's a three-time British champion. He's second, isn't he, after the opening six stages, 5.8 seconds behind. Then we got Alistair Fisher in third place. Josh Moffat, who leads the championship, is in fourth. But it's all pretty tight, isn't it? It's only, what, 5.8 seconds separating the top two, and then 30 seconds back to Alistair Fisher. Still a long way to go, 2 days of rallying to come, isn't there?
Absolutely, but I think when you look at it this morning, that Callum Devine, who of course won the last round in Killarney when Alistair Fisher crashed out on the very final stage, and Callum went on to win and to do his championship very, very good indeed. He got the early start and everybody, and he took an 8.4 second lead over Matt Edwards on the first stage. And, you know, that really was the difference all day between the two, because on the other four stages, they were nip and tuck. There was only fractions of a second between them. And ironically, then on the day's final stage,
Matt Edwards punched in another fastest time, the second of the day, while the first one was only just 0.1 of a second faster than Callum Devine. He was 2.9 seconds quicker than Devine on the last stage, so, and cut the deficit to 5.8 seconds. But, you know, there's only about 80 kilometres done today. There's 140 tomorrow, and there's 80 more on Sunday. So a lot of rallying still to do, John.
Yeah, 8 stages tomorrow and 6 on Sunday. This is all basically on the back, you would think, on the last couple of years of Craig Breen winning the Irish Tarmac Rally Championship back in 2019, wasn't it? And then we've obviously seen him back on the world rally scene. There's a few drivers as well in some of the junior classes or the WRC2 classes as well behind him. Rallying has certainly now picked up in terms of its popularity, not only with the fans, but with the drivers as well. And Craig Breen's leading this charge, isn't he?
Absolutely. But I think, every other sport, everybody talks about, you know, the top guys and they are so talented. And I think the drivers of the Irish Tarmac Championship don't get anywhere near the credit they deserve. What they do, you know, a lot of these guys push the car to the very limit for maybe 300 kilometres over a weekend, and there isn't a scratch on them, you know. And I think their ability behind the wheel is something I think that an awful lot of people, particularly in the media, is not appreciated, because Alan Devine, of course, has been peers in the ERC as well. Matt Edwards is a triple rally, British rally champion, and you know, those two apart today are just that little bit quicker. But, you know, it's very fickle, because Alistair Fisher was the man to beat down in Killarney, and it was only in the latter stages where Callum Devine was just picking away at fractions of a second. As he said, it's very hard to get time back nowadays in Irish rally. There was a time in the Donegal rally, if you led by a minute or 2 minutes, you still weren't guaranteed success, you know, and everybody could come at you. But a lead of 30 seconds in an Irish Tarmac Championship rally now is huge, or even 20 seconds. So, you know, the guys like Alistair Fisher and Josh, who is, I think Alistair is 34.9 seconds off soft spot, they'll have a lot of work to do tomorrow. But then you have, you know, stages like Knockalla and all those classics. So, you know, it's a puncture, it's a mistake and whatever, but it's the actual pace in the championship is huge. And Josh Moffat, Josh unfortunately was caught out this morning on the wrong tyres for the first loop, and he's now down in fourth place, and he's 38, he's almost 40 seconds off the lead. But, you know, with 14 stages to go, who's to say that he can't be up there or even get a podium finish to boost his championship? And no matter what happens this weekend, Josh Moffat will still be leading the championship on Sunday evening, because he has a lead of 21 points, and there's just 17 points on offer for a win. And, of course, the other thing about it is Matt Edwards, I don't think he's registered for the championship.
No.
That's another, you know, that's something I'm sure that he is in the back of his mind. So, but I think, you know, for the championship, I think it needs Callum Devine, or it needs an Alistair Fisher to win here this weekend to put a bit of edge on it.
And, yeah, we're also remembering in our thoughts the late Manus Kelly, because Manus was the king of the hills, wasn't he? And sadly was killed in 2019 competing in the Donegal Rally. He hasn't run since. So I say there's been a lot of tributes played to the late Manus up there this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, he was a legend up here. And, you know, I suppose Donegal has its own little niche in rallying, and it's a bubble as well, because, you know, the first year that Manus won the title, he won it just by half a second from Cork's Keith Cronin, who was in a Citroen C3 or the S5, and Manus was in the Subaru World Rally car. But I suppose one thing that is shown this weekend is that the entry has Declan Boyle and Sam Moffat, both in Fiesta World Rally cars, but they are way down the field. So, you know, the World Rally car now has been outpaced by modern-day R5 car.
Yeah.
And the Polo and the Citroen, obviously, and we have a Hyundai, so, and the Ford. So it's a great mix here, and I think the fans are being treated to a great spectacle this weekend.
Yeah, and I think the organisers were right a couple of years ago to ban the World Rally cars from winning. Well, they can win an individual event now, can't they? But they can't take championship points. So that's proving to be the case now, that the new generation cars are pulling ahead. So what have we got tomorrow? 8 more stages tomorrow? What time are you starting?
8 more stages tomorrow Carn Hill and Fannet Head and Knockalla, and that is the loop. And of course, Fannet Head is a stage I think that will test everybody. And I was speaking to Callum Devine earlier this week, and he said that could be the stage that will define the rally. But then, you know, there's always a sting in the tail in Donegal as well, because on Sunday, you've got three more stages, including Atlantic Drive, and anybody who's driven that knows exactly that it's
a heck of a stage.
You're up against the best drivers, but you're also up against the best terrain. So
absolutely,
nobody takes anything for granted, and the win is only cemented when you're on top at the ramp in the Mount Errigal Hotel.
All right, well, enjoy the rest of the weekend. That's Martin Walsh there of the Donegal Rally. I'm slightly envious, I must say. And now we're going to move things on. We had earlier on the programme Shane McGrath talking about hurling, but on Sunday, the unique pairings getting involved in the first ever Tailteann Cup semi-finals. Sligo against Cavanagh Croke Park is at 1:45, and that will be followed by Offaly against Westmeath, also Croke Park, starting at 4 o'clock. And I'm glad to say joining me on the line is Neil Ewing, the former Sligo captain. Hi, Neil.
Hi, John. How are things? How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. What do you make to the Tailteann Cup?
I think this weekend, very exciting weekend in the Tailteann Cup. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Croke Park as a venue, but I think all four teams heading there this weekend are going to be, very excited about getting up to Croke Park. I was talking to somebody during the week from Sligo. They said they tried to book train tickets, and the train is actually booked out from Sligo on Sunday morning. So that shows you the level of interest that could be there for this game on Sunday.
Sure. What about Cavan facing your old team in Croke Park to start off first? They were Ulster champions a couple of years ago. They're obviously taking this one seriously. This will not be an easy task.
Cavan, it's going to be a very tough game for Sligo. Yeah, definitely the strongest team in the competition. You know, to be honest, I thought Fermanagh were maybe the only team that were possibly capable of beating Fermanagh in the Tailteann Cup this year, just the way Fermanagh are capable of setting themselves up. They often kind of outperform the sum of their parts. But, even with that, Cavan dispatched them fairly comfortably. So that would leave you a little bit worried as a Sligo fan. You know, they have just a lot of physicality around the pitch. Garage McKiernan in there around the middle, he's a powerful forward, kind of complemented then by Paddy Lynch inside, is a little bit more elusive. But even at the back, I've seen them in the league game against Sligo this year at Markovic Park. Some of their Padraig Faulkner, Gunnar Brady at the back. I know Killian Clark is probably going to be, didn't start that day. He's probably going to start. Conor Moyna is also back from injury from Sunday, it looks like. So a lot of physicality. I probably look at this game as the physicality of Cavan versus the pace of Sligo. And, that's what excites me about Sligo on Sunday. While we maybe don't have the biggest team in the country, there's a lot of pace there, and just seeing how that pace is going to operate, in the wide open space of Croke Park, is something that gives a Sligo fan hope. A lot of legs around the middle of the field. So I'll be hoping Sligo can maybe try and avoid some of the physical space with Cavan and keep them running up and down the pitch and maybe open them up that way.
Okay, second match then, 4 o'clock start, Offaly against Westmeath, local derby, local Leinster derby. Talking to John Maughan a little while ago, he said Offaly were taking this extremely seriously. This is a chance for silverware for Offaly, well, at least to make the final anyway.
Yeah, definitely. John Maughan, I think, even from early on in this year, has spoken about the Tailteann Cup. Or, from once Offaly were relegated, they've come down from Division 2, one of the two teams to come down. So that would suggest they should be one of the stronger teams in it. Obviously, that didn't work in the case of Down, who just seemed to be having a terrible year as it was. And awfully similarly, I think just their form kind of since the middle of the league hasn't been particularly good.
Yeah, beaten by Wexford as well in the first round of the championship didn't help either, sure didn't.
Beaten by Wexford, but then they have went on and they beat Wexford after that, beaten Wicklow, beaten Offaly. Probably the problem I see, or beat New York, sorry, and Wicklow. Probably the problem I see for Offaly is that they haven't been tested in the Tailteann Cup today. They've won their three games fairly comfortably, whereas Westmeath, on the other hand, who, again, one of the other teams you would have picked out as an early favourite, they had a good test against Laois. Even the Carlow game, it ended up in a tight game as well, which was probably a little bit of a surprise, but it definitely leaves them battle-hardened. A few guys, Sam McCartan, I think, has been very impressive around the middle of the field for Westmeath so far. He's going to have a good battle the next day. Johnny Maloney has done a lot of damage for Offaly so far in the Tailteann Cup, coming from that half-back line. So, I think there are two guys for people to watch on Sunday that, it mightn't be household names, but a game that is on TV, keep an eye out for those two. Very talented footballers. But, it's just how much do you read into the form lines of the two teams? It's very hard to know. Add in the fact that it's a local rivalry. This should really be a very, very tight game. you know, do you maybe fancy Westmeath has just a little bit more scoring power? Niall McNamee, you know, he's going to have probably a great battle with Kieran Maguire inside in the Westmeath full back line. Obviously, Offaly have lost Niall Darby. They're casting during the week. One of their
That's a big blow, isn't it? That's a big blow.
A big blow, but does it give Offaly a cause? Then you know, you just don't know. Just little things like that can motivate certain players and certain teams. You know, it's not going to be the difference, but they'd obviously prefer to have him on the pitch. So you know, how they replace him is going to be one thing. But yeah, I just think maybe Westmeath with John Heslin and Ron O'Toole up front, even Rickon Allen there in the half forward line, maybe just a year or two ahead of Offaly development wise in terms of, you know, Offaly introducing some of those under 20 All-Ireland winning players. They're probably going to need maybe another two seasons before they're having a huge impact on the team.
Alright, well listen, you going to Croke Park quickly yourself? Are you going?
Yeah, looking forward to it Sunday now, can't wait.
Okay.
Hope Sligo bring this pace to Croke Park and we have a great day out.
Oh, would it be great to see a team like Sligo making a Tailteann Cup final. Best of luck and enjoy the game. That's Neil Ewing there, the ex-Sligo captain, on the Tailteann Cup semi-finals, which are on Sunday. Again, they're on RTE television. Let's go back to Greg Allen. Greg Allen in Brookline, it's Rory time.
Yeah, it's Rory time, and he started off steadily with two pars, and this is what he's aiming to do. It's not really the Rory of 11 years ago, swashbuckling his way to a record-winning margin in the United States Open at Congressional in 2011. This is steady and careful Rory trying to keep big numbers off his card, and he's valuing the fact that pars are really what the US Open is all about. So a couple of pars, stays at 3-under, and at the moment he's tied for second place, just one off the leader, and that leader is somewhat of a shock bolter, Callum Tarran, a 31-year-old English journeyman pro, they call them, from Darlington, from the north of England. 4-under par. He's just dropped a shot, in fact. He got the 5-under after 5, bogeyed the par 3 6th a moment ago. Callum Tarran, the outright leader, on 4-under par, one stroke clear now, of a group of 7 players on 3-under par. And those players include Rory McIlroy, who's 3-under after 2, but also the world number one, Scotty Scheffler, who shot that round of 67 I was speaking of earlier. 5-under for his last 11 holes. That was a real run of birdies in the wind, which was unexpected. He had been 2-over par at one stage, possibly worried about missing the cut with 11 holes to play, and instead he projected himself back into the picture right at the top of the leaderboard, Scotty Scheffler. Nick Hardy, another American, he's in the clubhouse on 3-under par after a round of 68. He's a player who plays mostly on the Corn Ferry Tour, the secondary tour, ranked outside the world's top 300. Hayden Buckley, Matthew Neesmith and Joe Damon, the other players tied with McIlroy and Scheffler. In that group, on 3-under, one off the lead, and then Sam Burns, 3 times winner on the PGA Tour with that round of 67 I spoke of earlier. He's on 2-under par in that group, so too is Matt Fitzpatrick, bang in form with that 5th place finish in the PGA Championship. We're just looking at the weather radar here, and there's some rain definitely going to hit this country club in Boston fairly soon, John, so that could affect the scenario. But two men who were not worried about that, Seamus Power, in with a round of 70, birdied his 17th hole to get in with a round of level par 70 in the wind this morning. That's fine golf, and he's on 1-over par, tied for 36th place, and he'll move up, I'm sure, this afternoon, the way the scoring is going to go. And also, Shane Lowry birdied his 17th hole, got in with a round of 72 on 4-over par. Lowry is more likely than not, I think, to make the cut, even though he's tied for 78th now.
Yeah, because the cut's at plus 3 at the moment, isn't it? So just
a
one.
It's
marginal,
a
yeah.
It's all about conditions and the fact that a lot of players are out this afternoon who are going to be suffering in those conditions. From Shane Lowry's point of view, hopefully suffering a bit. Hopefully McIlroy isn't one of them.
Sure. Noah Phil, looks like LIV Golf hasn't really helped his game.
Well, look, Phil Mickelson has only had 3 rounds of competitive golf in the last 4 months. He's currently 11 over par with one hole to play, and he has played pretty awful.
Yeah. You know? I would just say the Brookline course, I was watching it yesterday, it's a really tough ask, isn't it? Because it's not like bouncing the balls up and onto the green. You've got to go across bunkers, and there's a lot of grass around the bunkers and up towards the edge of the greens as well. So it's a tough ask, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the things about Brookline, it's an old course, over 100 years old, and this course has been laid out on the land, as the land and the folds of the land are designed by the ethereal being. And, you know, literally, this is not something that has been constructed. So it's got a wonderful shape to it. There are rocky outcrops, there are greens up on hilltops, and it's just, I think, spectacular.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a great weekend to watch. It's just not a PGA Tour conventional course, and it's going to give us a good US Open finish, I think. There have been three playoffs in the three US Opens here in the past. Don't rule out a playoff, judging by this leaderboard, which at the moment has eight players tied for second place, one of them being McIlroy, and just one leader, one stroke clear, Callum Tarran on four under.
Well done. Thanks, Greg. Go Rory. I hope you enjoyed this programme, which was Game On with John Kenny. I'll be back on Monday. In fact, I'm back on Monday and Tuesday. The official chart show with Andrew Dupuyer is coming up next. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Live across the nation.
And on the RTE Radio Player, this is
RTE
2 FM.
It's 7 o'clock. I'm John O'Connell.